Warning, you are about to listen to a life-changing session of the Think and Grow Rich Global Mastermind audio training series. Any mind-blowing income, health, happiness, and otherwise earth-shattering testimonials of complete transformation are not meant to serve as a guarantee of what will happen in your life as you continue to plug into these audios. Rather, they're meant to give you an idea of what's possible. Bear in mind, results are not guaranteed, they are earned. Be forewarned, common side effects to listening to these audios may include increased mental alertness, random and unexplained feelings of joy, a crystal clear sense of purpose in life, spontaneous outbursts of laughter, obscene amounts of new and exciting monetary deposits, and other ridiculously awesome symptoms of living a purpose-filled life. Please enjoy the show.
What if you refused to look at problems as problems? How would things shift in your life if you viewed your problems as spiritual lessons chosen with love that were for your own highest good? What's up, moneymakers? This is Mahara Tucker in Atlanta, GA, and you're on the Think and Grow Rich Show. Our host, Mr. Paul Hutchings, will be along shortly, but for now, tell us your name and where you're calling in from.
Good morning, Think and Grow Rich family. Larry and Wendy, McKinney, Texas.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Wendy. I have a correction. I think we have a guest host today. We'll find out in a moment.
Good morning, Betty and Mahara. How are you this morning?
Hey, Betty. Good morning.
Good morning,
Betty.
This
is Lori from Wenatchee. Good morning. Hey, oh, and somebody else, too. Good
hey,
morning.
Kathy and Lori. Hey, Lori Sue.
Hey.
Beautiful ladies, welcome.
Good morning, everyone. It's Adele from Long Island, New York.
Adele.
Hi, honey. How are you? Hi, everyone.
Good to hear you. Awesome.
Good morning, Mahara fam. Andre from Jacksonville.
Good morning, Andre.
Good morning, John.
he's crashing the girl party. Hey, Andre.
Well, ladies first, though.
Who else is with us this morning?
Good morning, it's Sean in Massachusetts.
Hey, Sean. Good morning.
Hey,
morning.
Steve from Florida.
Hey, Steve.
Good morning.
Good morning, Megan here. Xavier Gray out of Atlanta, Georgia. Let's rock.
What's going on, Xavier?
Good morning.
Easter famine. You guys come all at once? Are you saying that? Tell us your name and where you're calling it from.
Good morning, family. This is Caleb in Texas.
Hey, Caleb.
Hey, Caleb.
Good morning.
Hi, sweetie.
This is Sherry in Missouri. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Hi, Sherry.
Good morning. I take action, Arthur, St. Louis.
Hey,
hey, good morning,
Arthur.
Best
guy ever.
You must be the life of the party, Arthur.
Yeah,
well, nice to be thought of.
Action, baby. Got to.
Yeah.
If you want something to happen, you got to make it happen. Who else is with us this morning?
That is Whiskey.
Who is that?
Bill Moy.
Hey, Bill.
Good morning.
What's
good morning.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Good morning. Good morning.
I know a secret about Bill.
Anita in Columbus. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, Anita.
Anita.
Good morning.
Morning, Sherry. How y'all doing this morning?
Hey, Sherry.
Hey.
Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning, family. Joe Dollar.
Hey,
good morning, Joe.
JD. Where is that rally rooster?
All right.
Good morning, Think and Grow Rich family. This is Anthony Williams from beautiful Clearwater, Florida. It's a great morning to be alive. Good morning
Anthony
to everyone.
Anthony Williams.
Good morning,
Williams.
Family.
Well, good morning, good morning. Thank you, Royce family. This is Bill Moist. I'm your host today. We got some exciting things to talk about. I want to welcome each and every one of you on the call today. If you are new to the call, then a special welcome to you. And we encourage you to give this call 6 weeks. And if you apply the material, well, we think it will make a change in your life. So as is our custom, we like to have a little shout out here at the very beginning, just to get everybody going. So let me unmute the lines and let's give it our best. Hang on 1 second here.
Happy.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'm excited to be on the call with you, as I am nearly every day. I rarely miss the call. Every once in a while, something comes up. But thrilled when Paul asked me if I were the host to call today. So it's really good to be with all of y'all. And one of the principal things that we hold to here very closely is the major definite purpose and self-confidence formula. And the reason that we talk about it every day, every time we're on the call every day, is because that is kind of an anchor, and it keeps us going in the right direction, those things that are most important, because it's really easy for things to come into our life from the side to get distracted. So as is our custom, if someone would like to read that major definite purpose and self-confidence formula for us, well, we would love to hear from you. So let's see who can come out and do that. Star 6, who wants to come on out and share the definite major purpose and self-confidence formula?
Okay, Bill, I'm here.
Okay, come on, Mahira.
Okay. I want to see if anybody else wanted to jump out, because I love to give them an opportunity to lead and step out. But I also don't want to leave you hanging, so here I am. By the first day of, I will have in my possession this incredible amount of specific monthly residual income, which will come to me in various amounts from time to time during the interim. In exchange for this money, I am giving the most efficient service of which I am capable, rendering the fullest possible quantity and the best possible quality of service in the capacity of. I believe that I have this money in my possession. My faith and my knowing is so strong that I see this money before my eyes. I can touch it with my hands. It is now awaiting transfer to me at the time and in the proportion that I'm delivering the service that I'm rendering for it. I'm awaiting a plan by which to accumulate this money, and I am following that plan as it is received. First, I know that I have the ability to achieve the object of my definite purpose in life. Therefore, I demand of myself persistent, continuous action towards its attainment. And I here and now promise to continue taking such action. Second, I realize the dominating thoughts of my mind will reproduce themselves in outward physical action, and they transform themselves into physical reality. Therefore, I concentrate my thoughts for 30 minutes daily upon the task of thinking of the person I'm becoming, thereby creating in my mind a clear mental picture of that improved, awesome person. Third, I know through the principle of autosuggestion that any desire I persistently hold in my mind will seek expression through some practical means of attaining the object back of it. Therefore, I devote 10 minutes daily to to demanding of myself the development of more self-confidence. Fourth, I have clearly written down a description of my definite chief aim in life, and I will never stop until I have developed sufficient self-confidence for its complete attainment. Fifth, I fully realize that no wealth or position can long endure unless built upon truth and justice. Therefore, I engage only in transactions that benefit all whom are affected. I succeed by attracting to myself the forces I wish to be blessed by and the cooperation of other people. I will induce others to be of service because of my willingness to serve. I will eliminate hatred, envy, jealousy, selfishness, and cynicism by developing more love for all humanity, because I know that a negative attitude towards others can never bring me success. I will cause others to believe in me because I will believe in them and in myself. I have signed my name to this formula, and I commit it to memory and repeat it aloud once or more a day with the full faith and knowing that it is influencing my thoughts and actions as I am becoming an even more self-reliant and successful person. Oh, divine providence, guide me as I discover and develop my true potential to be a blessing to the world.
Man, thank you, Mahara. Let's give her a shout out here. Okay, you know, one of the things I love about this call is that there's lots of chances for us to take leadership and roles, and you know, reading our definite purpose is one of those things, and you know, it's really great. And when we do that, we like to support that person that is sharing. So that's thank you, Mahara, for that. Well, you know, if you've listened to me on this call very much, you know that I love to tell stories. And in just a minute, we're going to get into our regularly scheduled material, which is page 216. We'll be starting with the fear of loss of love in the Think and Grow Rich book. But I had an interesting experience, actually two experiences on Saturday, and they really were kind of the opposite side of the coin. And what it was, I heard, I know I have a good friend, and he was talking about not judging people and how harmful it can be when we judge people, when we say all cops are like this, all people like this are like this, and we have judgment of people, especially when it comes to moral issues. Well, this man is a Messianic Jew, which means he was of Jewish faith, and he came to believe that Jesus was the Messiah, and which is really contrary to the Jewish teaching. In fact, they were convinced that he was not the Messiah. So, but the prejudice he ran into against Christians was that he actually grew up in South Africa, but his father and grandfather were from Europe, and during the time of the Nazis, the Christians would out the Jews in their community. So they would tell the Nazis where the Jews were, and then they would be hauled off to a concentration camp, and then the Christians would take their houses. So, you know, no wonder they had such a terrible opinion of Christians. So 6 months after becoming a Christian, believing in Jesus, he still wouldn't go to Christian churches because he had this judgment about Christians, what terrible people they were. And of course, in America, it was totally different than that. But he gave in his own life, he's also was a pastor, and he travels the world, and he talks to both Jews and also to Muslims, which is interesting. So he's got to break through that judgment. But his sister was gay, and she was afraid because he was a pastor that she would judge him and would judge her, I mean, and that there'd be this big barrier between them. And so finally she told him, and not only did he not judge her, he actually went to her wedding. And not necessarily agree with her lifestyle, but that he didn't judge her as a person. He loved her because he said, I don't have a gay sister, I have a sister. And I thought that was really wonderful. Well, so then that was Saturday morning. And then Saturday evening, I was invited to a new church that I'd never been to, and it's fairly new. It's only been around for a year, and my friend invited me. He said, well, Bill, he said, I want to tell you that if you go, you'll be in the minority status there. an area where I live in. I live just west of Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, and it's predominantly white. But this was actually east of the airport toward Dallas. And so I went there, and I was in a minority. But here was the thing that was amazing. So, it's really hard to not do a negative. And it's really hard. So, in other words, it's difficult not to judge people if that's what you're trying to do. But the opposite of that is acceptance. So as soon as I walked into that room, I felt totally accepted. And in this particular church, their tradition was not to shake your hand, but was to give you a hug. Even the greeters, the ushers, gave you a hug. And then before the service, people came up and gave us a hug. And then during the service, when they greeted each other, they gave us a hug. And then when we left, I actually got in line to meet the pastor, because I'd never talked to him before. And as people would come up to him, it was really neat. He would stick both of his hands out and kind of wiggle his fingers at you, towards you, to say, come to me, and he'd give you a hug. And I really enjoyed his service. The man was very articulate and a great wordsmith. And so that was the opposite of being judged because of my skin color. Even though I was because I was a minority, I was totally accepted. So, at any rate, I just thought that was really kind of a wonderful experience to be so well accepted and to realize that. So what the pastor said earlier in the day, he said that what happens is that when you're judging people or a group of people, quite often they're judging you. And that's why these big barriers come up between people and why we sometimes have so little understanding of each other, because each person or each group is judging the other. They're always like this. They're always like this. They're always like that. And of course, many times we're not. We're all people, and we can make those connections. So, I'm all about making connections with people, and so that for me was really helpful. Was not to judge, but rather just to accept people. So hopefully that was beneficial to all of y'all. And we'll go ahead and jump into our material here. We're on, again, page 216, the fear of loss of love. The original source of this inherent fear needs but little description, because it's obviously grew out of man's polygamous habit of stealing his fellow man's mate and his habit of taking liberties with her whenever he could. Jealousy and other forms of dementia praecox grow out of man's inherent fear of his loss of love of someone. So I didn't know what that word, I'm not sure how they pronounce that. I believe it's dementia praecox, but I'd look it up because that was a word I had not seen before. And it says premature dementia, precocious madness, chronic deteriorating psychic disorder characterized by rapid cognitive disintegration, usually beginning in the late teens or early childhood. So think about that this loss of love can create early dementia. I mean, that's the fear of loss of love. So I thought that was interesting. So let's continue on here. This fear is the most painful of all the six basic fears. It probably plays more havoc with the body and mind than any of the other basic fears, as it often leads to premature insanity. The fear of loss of love probably dates back to the Stone Age, when men stole women by brute force. They continue to steal females, but their technique was their techniques have changed. Instead of force, they now use persuasion, the promise of pretty clothes, motor cars, and other bait, much more effective than physical force. Man's habits are the same as they were at the dawn of civilization, but he expresses them differently. Careful analysis has shown that women are more susceptible to this fear than men. This fact is easily explained. Women have learned from experience that men are polygamous by nature, that they are not to be trusted in the hands of rivals. The thing that I find so amazing about his Dr. Hill's teaching, which is now nearly a century old, is that oftentimes science has proved that the things he taught really are true. Some of the social customs that he talks about have changed some, but nevertheless, the material is still right on the mark. Symptoms of the fear of loss of love. The distinguishing symptoms of this fear are, one, jealousy, the habit of being suspicious of friends and loved ones without any reasonable evidence of sufficient grounds. Jealousy is a form of dementia praecox, which sometimes becomes violent without the slightest cause. The habit of accusing a wife or husband of infidelity without grounds. General suspicion of everyone. Absolute faith in no one. So, you know, jealousy is really a negative power that can really divide people, especially couples. Fault finding, the habit of finding fault with friends, relatives, business associates, and loved ones upon the slightest provocation and without any cause whatsoever. Gambling, the habit of gambling, stealing, cheating, and otherwise taking hazardous chances to provide money for loved ones with the belief that one can be bought. The habit of spending beyond one's means, of incurring debts, to provide gifts for loved ones with the object of making a favorable showing. Insomnia, nervousness, lack of persistence, weakness of will, lack of self-control, and lack of self-reliance, bad temper. Fear of old age. In the main, this fear grows out of two sources. First, the thought that old age may bring with it poverty. Secondly, and by far the most common source of origin, from false and cruel teachings of the past, which have been too well mixed with fire and brimstone and other bogeys cunningly designed to enslave man through fear. The basic fear of old age, man has two very sound reasons for apprehension. One, growing out of the distrust of his fellow man, who may seize whatever worldly goods he possesses, and the other is out arising from terrible pictures of the world beyond, which were planted in his mind through social heredity before he became into full possession of his mind. Possibility of ill health, which is more common as people grow older, is also a contributing cause of this common fear of old age. Eroticism also enters into the cause of fear of old age, as no one cherishes the thought of diminishing sex attraction. The most common cause of fear of old age is associated with the possibility of poverty. Poor house is not a pretty word. It throws a chill into the mind of every person who faces the possibility of having to spend his declining years on a poor farm. Another contributing cause of the fear of old age is the possibility of the loss of freedom and independence, as old age may bring with it the loss of both physical and economic freedom. Symptoms of the fear of old age. The commonest symptoms of this fear are the tendency to slow down and develop inferiority complex at the age of mental maturity, around the age of 40, falsely believing oneself to be slipping because of age. The truth is that man's most useful years, mentally and spiritually, are those between 40 and 60. The habit of speaking apologetically of oneself as being old, merely because of one's reached age of 40 or 50, instead of reversing the rule of expressing the gratitude for having reached the age of wisdom and understanding. The habit of killing off initiative, imagination, and self-reliance by falsely believing oneself too old to exercise these qualities. The habit of a man or woman of 40 dressing with the aim of trying to appear much younger and affecting mannerism of youth, thereby inspiring the ridicule by both friends and strangers. Fear of death. To some, this is the cruelest of all basic fears. The reason is obvious. Terrible pangs of fear associated with the thought of death in the majority of cases may be charged directly to religious fanaticism. The so-called heathen are less afraid of death than those who are civilized. For hundreds of millions of years, man has been asking the still unanswered question, hence and whither. Where do I come from and where am I going? In the darker ages of the past, the more cunning and crafty were not slow to offer the answer of these questions for a price. Witness now the major source of origin of fear of death. Come into my tent and embrace my faith, accept my dogmas, and I will give you a ticket that will admit you straight away into heaven when you die, cries the leader of sectarianism. Remain out of the tent, says the same leader, and may the devil take you and burn you throughout eternity. Eternity is a long time, and fire is a terrible thing. The thought of eternal punishment with fire not only causes man to fear death, it often causes him to lose his reason. It destroys interest in life and makes happiness impossible. During my research, I reviewed the book entitled A Catalog of the Gods, in which were listed 30,000 gods which man has worshipped. Think of that, 30,000 of them, represented by every form of crawfish to man. It is little wonder that men have become frightened at the approach of death. While the religious leaders may not be able to provide safe conduct into heaven, nor, by lack of such provision, allow the unfortunate to descend into hell, the possibility of the latter seems so terrible that the very thought of it lays hold of the imagination in such a realistic way that it paralyzes reasons and sets up the fear of death. In truth, no man knows, no man has ever known, what heaven or hell is like, nor does any man know if either place actually exists. This very lack of positive knowledge often opens the door to human mind to charlatan, so he may enter and control the mind with this stock of legerdemain and various brands of pious fraud and trickery. The fear of death is not as common now as it was during the age when there was no great colleges or university. Men of science have turned the spotlight of truth upon the world, and this truth is rapidly freeing men and women from this terrible fear of death. The young men and women who attend the colleges and universities are not impressed by fire and brimstone. Through the aid of biology, astronomy, and geology, and other related sciences, the fear of dark ages, which gripped the minds of men and destroyed their reason, have been dispelled. Insane asylums have been filled with men and women who have gone mad because of fear of death. This fear is useless. Death will come, no matter what anyone may think about it. Accept it as a necessity and pass the thought out of your mind. It must be a necessity or it would not come to all. Perhaps it is not as bad as it has been pictured. The entire world is made up of two things, energy and matter. In elementary physics, we learned that neither matter nor energy, the only two realities known to man, can be created nor destroyed. Both matter and energy can be transformed, but neither can be destroyed. Life is energy. If it is anything, it is neither energy nor matter can be destroyed of us. Of course, life cannot be destroyed. Life, like other forms of energy, may be passed through various processes of transition or change, but it cannot be destroyed. Death is mere transition. Death is mere transition. That's an interesting thought, isn't it? Death is not mere change or transition, then nothing comes after death except a long, eternal, peaceful sleep, and sleep with nothing to be feared. Thus you may wipe out forever the fear of death. Symptoms of the fear of death. The general symptoms of fear are the habit of thinking about dying instead of making the most out of life due to the generality, the lack of purpose or lack of suitable occupation. The fear is more prevalent among the aged, but sometimes more useful are victims of it. The greatest of all remedies for the fear of death is burning desire for achievement. That's an important point. Let me repeat that. The greatest of all remedies for the fear of death is a burning desire for achievement, backed by useful service to others. What a great insight. A busy person seldom has time to think about dying. He finds life too thrilling to worry about death. Sometimes the fear of death is closely associated with the fear of poverty, or one's death would leave loved ones poverty-stricken. In other cases, the fear of death is caused by illness and consequent breaking down of physical body resistance. The commonest cause of fear of death are ill health, poverty, lack of appropriate occupation, disappointment over love, insanity, religious fanaticism. Old man worry. Worry is a state based upon fear. It works slowly but persistently. It is insidious and subtle. Step by step, digs itself in until it paralyzes one's reasoning faculty, destroys self-confidence initiative. Worry is a form of sustained fear caused by indecision. Therefore, it is a state of mind which can be controlled. An unsettled mind is helpless. Indecision makes an unsettled mind. Most individuals lack the willpower to reach decisions promptly and to stand by them after they've been made, even during the normal business conditions, during periods of economic unrest, such as the world recently experienced. He was talking there, of course, about the Great Depression. The individual is handicapped, not alone by his inherent nature, to be slow at reaching decisions, but is influenced by the decision of others around him who have created a state of mass decision, indecision, I'm sorry, who have created a state of mass indecision. During the Depression, the whole atmosphere all over the world was filled with frenzy and worries. The two mental diseases germs which have spread themselves to the Wall Street frenzy of 1929. There's only one known antidote for these germs. It is a habit of prompt and firm decision. Wow. There's only one known antidote for these germs. It is a habit of prompt and firm decision. Moreover, it is an antidote for every kind that individual must apply to for himself. We do not worry over conditions once we have reached a decision to follow a definite action. I once interviewed a man who was to be electrocuted in 2 hours. The condemned man was the calmest of the 8 men who were in death cells with him. His calmness prompted me to ask him how he knew what he was doing. His calmness prompted me to ask him how he felt to know that he was going into eternity in a short while. With a smile of confidence on his face, he said, "It feels just fine. Just fine. Brother, my troubles will soon be over. I have nothing but trouble in this life. It has been a hardship to get food and clothing. Soon I will need none of these things. I have felt fine ever since I learned for certain that I must die. I made up my mind then to accept the fate of good spirit." As he spoke, he devoured a dinner of proportions sufficient for 3 men, eating every mouthful of food brought to him, and apparently enjoying it as much as if no disaster awaited him. Decision gave this man resignation of his to his fate. Decision gave this man resignation to his fate. Decision also can prevent one's acceptance of undesired circumstances. The 6 basic fears become translated into state of worry through indecision. Relieve yourself forever of the fear of death by reaching a decision to accept death as an inescapable event. Whip the fear of poverty by reaching a decision to get along with whatever wealth you can accumulate without worry. Put your foot upon the neck of the fear of criticism by reaching a decision not to worry about the fear about other people, not to worry about what other people think, do, or say. Eliminate the fear of old age by reaching a decision to accept it not as a handicap, but as a great blessing which carries with it self-control and understanding not known to you. Acquit yourself of the fear of ill health by the decision to forget symptoms. Master the fear of loss of love by reaching the decision to get along without love, if that is necessary. Kill the habit of worry in all its forms. By reaching a general blanket decision that nothing which life has to offer is worth a price of worry. With this decision will come poise, peace of mind, and calmness of thought, which brings happiness. A man whose mind is filled with fear not only destroys his own chances of intellectual action, but transmits these destructive vibrations to the minds of all who come into contact with him and destroys all their chances. Even a dog or horse knows when its master lacks courage. Moreover, a dog or a horse will pick up the vibrations of fear known thrown off by its master and behavior accordingly. Lower down the line of intelligence of the animal kingdom, one finds the same capacity to pick up the vibrations of fear. A honeybee immediately senses fear in the mind of the person or persons unknown. A bee will sting persons whose mind is releasing vibrations much more rapidly than it will molest a person who registers no fear. I think it's a pretty good place to stop. I did want to go through those last couple items there because it was giving us, you know, we've been talking about fear and fear of death and these other fears, and there were some great suggestions there about what we can do to overcome those fears. So I thought that was really a good place to stop. But just one comment is that, you know, there's he said that no man knows about heaven or hell, or no man has gone there. And, you know, there may be some evidence that some people have experienced it. If you happen to see the movie, there was a true story about a young girl in Texas, in Burleson, Texas, Miracles from Heaven. And then there was she talked about her experience of being in heaven. And then there was another movie, a book. And it was called 90 Minutes in Heaven, about a man who was killed in a terrible car accident. He was pronounced dead on the scene, and they put a sheet over him. And in Texas, it happened in Texas. In Texas, they can't remove that body until the coroner pronounces him dead. So, but the paramedics had the road shut off and that nobody could go by. And so a man went up to him and said he wanted to pray for the man. And it was a terrible scene. And didn't know what to pray. So he started singing. And then the dead man started singing after being dead for 90 minutes. So he described his experience in heaven. And on a personal note, a number of years ago, when I was going through some tremendous fear, I had a dream that I went to heaven and I could sense my family there, my ancestors. And so I asked the question later on when I was awake, is, was this dream so that I wouldn't fear death? And the answer I got back was no, this dream was so you don't fear life. So anyway, with that, just a couple directions here for us when we come out on the mastermind. I want to remind you that this is a non-company specific call, and please do not mention company names, system names, or leader names unless the leaders are part of the community. So I'm going to open up the lines here, and one at a time will come out, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. There really is, there was quite a few nuggets in this call today. So let me see what I can do here. Okay, star 6.
Morris, Anthony Williams from beautiful Clearwater, Florida.
Hey, Anthony, brother. How you doing, brother?
Good morning, brother. How are you feeling this morning, man?
Awesome, awesome. Thank you.
Man, I'm doing wonderful, too. It's such an exciting time to be up and aware, man, on the Think and Grow Rich Mastermind. I love the fact that you came out and you shared so much about, and especially your story about judgment. One of the things that I was thinking about when you mentioned that was, you know, judgment is also based in fear. You know, when we go to a restaurant, you know, to order a meal, you know, the actual menu is not the meal. You know, we have to wait for the food to come out. So we make a judgment according to, you know, what we know that chicken tastes like or whatever it tastes like, but that's not the meal, you know. And when we judge something, we stop acquiring information about that thing. And another thing about that is that, you know, when we form an opinion, like I said, we stop actually drawing in information, and that's based in fear. It's something in human nature that, you know, in the background of our minds, we seek for pleasure and we want to run away from pain, you know, and anything that we think is painful, we seem to run away from, which builds up this fear in our minds. And one of the things is that, you know, a lot of our fears that we have about life, about, you know, success, about failure, most of these things are based in childhood things that have not been evaluated up until present of becoming adults. So, I mean, I think it's important for us to really to analyze any fear that we have, any judgment, because like I said, judgment is based in fear. I mean, you're making a judgment about something, you stop acquiring information, so you crystallize this thing into your mind, and you're saying, well, it's like this, and there's nothing else, and you crystallize that thing, and now, you know, you're making a judgment about it, which may not actually be true. So I think it's very important for us, you know, any type of fears that we have in life, any type of fears that we face, is that we analyze our own minds and whatever our thoughts about it, and have we actually crystallized something, or has something happened in our childhood to where we stopped gathering information? Now we have had this response towards something either externally or internally that, you know, that causes this fear to come up, you know? So, I mean, great, great points that you covered. I just wanted to share that. I turn it back over to you. Everybody have a blessed day. Back to you, Bill Moise.
Thank you, Anthony. Great insights there. Star 6, who's next?
Hey, Bill Moist.
Yes, Paul. Good morning,
so,
brother.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you. Love to be on the call.
So funny thing, I was when you opened up the lines, I said to myself, I'm going to jump out first, because sometimes I hear people say they try to come out and there's no room. And I was like, I'm going to prove them all wrong. And then Anthony beat me.
That's so funny. I love it. He's so quick on the switch. I love it.
So, so I just have a couple of thoughts based on what you shared this morning. You know, the first thought is I was reading from The Seasons of Life by Jim Rohn this morning, and he shared a couple of things that I want to pass along to everyone. He said, and I guess let me preface this with the fact that, guys, if we turn on the news and if we watch politics and if we, you know, watch, you know, TV, it seems like people would have us believe that there is no tolerance, that the world is full of criticism, that the world is full of hate, that the world is full of bigotry, that no one loves one another, that no one's patient with one another. Like, that's the message that seems to come through the mass media. And so when you came on, Bill, and you told those stories that you did, you know, at the first part of the mastermind, I was just grateful for the picture of the beautiful things that do happen in the world. And here's what Jim Rohn said this morning as I was reading in this book. He said, the value of surrounding yourself with the right friends is immeasurably awesome. The danger of surrounding yourself with the wrong friends can be devastating. Perhaps a good theme might be friendship in proportion to the right personal growth from that friendship. And finally, be aware, and he continues on here, that the right friends should not be equated to those with the most money. It is the attitudes, awareness, and other positive human virtues of the friends we select that are of importance. Not all poor people make poor friends, nor do all rich have an enriching effect on our lives. And so I just think, you know, back to what you were sharing, Bill, and I'm just grateful that you're my friend. I'm grateful that your attitudes and your awareness and your positive human virtues are impacting me and my life and my thinking and everyone here, you know, this mastermind. It really is unique what we do here. So I'm grateful for that. And then the last thought that I have is I've got 50 seconds left. I'm timing myself. is the fears. You know, when I first got started in home business, the owner of the network marketing company told me, he said, if you want to be successful in this business, he said, here's the best piece of advice I can give you. Become a student of human nature. So over the past 10 years, I've been studying human nature. And, you know, we learn about what motivates people, you know, hope of gain and fear of loss. And as you were going through the symptoms of the fear of loss of love this morning, I realized that I have some of those symptoms. I don't think I fear loss of love, but I think the symptoms of fear can apply to like multiple categories, right? So like if we fear losing our wealth, if we fear poverty, if we fear the future, those symptoms can show up. And so I'm grateful that, you know, we have an ability, if we see some of those symptoms, we can get rid of them. I thought of Joe Dollar talking about auto-suggestion. And, you know, if I'm seeing some of these symptoms of fear in my life, you know, worry, stress, not being able to sleep well, right? When maybe some of you out there have some of this stuff, we can affect that through auto-suggestion. Why not do as Joe Dollar says, put some of these things that Dr. Hill mentioned this morning in our auto-suggestion and remedy that. I think we can have a big effect on that. So those are my thoughts. Bill, back to you.
Thank you, Paul. Yeah, you know, tolerance is the opposite of judging people, of not accepting people. So that's I'm glad you brought that out, Paul. Star 6, who wants to share next?
It's Jesse from New York. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, Jesse. Good morning, Jesse.
How are you? And as you know, I just love your stories, and today was no different. I was thinking about judgment. And I used to be one of those people, you know, you can kind of, I remember when I was first married, we would sit in the car. My husband at the time was in the Air Force living in North Dakota. And we would sit in front of this McDonald's and we would judge people and make fun and this and that. And So I matured and I got older and thought about how that was so hurtful if they could ever hear about what I was saying, how I wouldn't like that for that being done to me. Of course, a lot of my thinking changed. And one thing I learned was when we judge, we never, like you said, or Anthony, I believe, said, we cut off the information and we don't know what is going on with those other people. And when someone doesn't do something quite the way you'd like, we judge them. And something was offensive that they did and we judge them. We don't know really what's going on with that other person. And perhaps they responded because they had a bad day or something horrific had happened to them in their past. And this is part of what has caused their actions. And so today I realize that I cannot judge anyone any longer. We don't have both sides of the story. So I feel that before we can judge or cause blame or saying someone is wrong, we need to really research, if that's important enough for them, about them to find out what it is that we're talking about. So getting the facts, and I think that's part of one of the future principles that we will talk about, is accurate thinking, knowing, you know, getting all the facts. So judgment is no longer something that you do, because try to remember, you need to get both sides of the story. So that is something that has helped me not judge people. So what Paul had said is, you know, being around wonderful friends is part of that. We don't need to be around the people that may be cause us to be uncomfortable, but be around the people that resonate with us. And I just wanted to touch on the fear of death. For me, I don't have a fear of death. I have more of a concern about good health, which could cause death. So, I mean, which not good health could cause death. So I think in a way the fear for me of having good health has caused me to have a much better quality of life, because I research what I can do to have better health, you know, whether it's, you know, additional supplements or exercise or whatever that is. I then look at that as a way to be in better health, to minimize the chances of perhaps, you know, death coming to me prematurely. So I see that perhaps as an advantage. But those are my shares. Those are the thoughts that that came up in some of the stories that you have told in the past. And just wanted to share some of those thoughts with everyone. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jesse. You know, I have a good friend who's an executive coach, and he works with CEOs, heads of corporations, the C-level management. He works with U.S. senators, with fire chiefs, police chiefs, and homeless people. And so a number of years ago, we were feeding the homeless around Christmas time, and he met a man who had just got out of prison. He'd been in prison most of his life. And he just felt like he was supposed to be that man's friend, and they developed a relationship over a period of time, and he helped him get an apartment and stuff. And that man has now passed away, but my friend who was the coach said he learned more from that homeless guy than all these executives. It was more, that was a more meaningful relationship than all the executives. So it goes back to what we're talking about as far as judgment goes. So Star 6, who wants to share next?
My name's Leslie. Good morning.
Hey, Leslie. Leslie, so Leslie or Leslie?
Leslie from Nevada. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
I really enjoyed all that was shared thus far, and I've learned through experience that loving and embracing what you fear most helps you overcome fear. For instance, you know, growing up, I used to believe that every man I loved would die, because I've endured so many deaths from my father, my brother, both my grandpas, my first boyfriend. So I was like really believing I was hexed, and if I love men, you know, that they would die. And so I had a fear of men dying around me. And, you know, so when I met my husband, you know, I was like pushing him off in a way. And he's like, what is up with you? We'll be like right here at this point of like loving past, you know, whatever. And then you'll just push me away. You'll ignore me. What is going on? And I wouldn't answer that for a while. And I finally just said, you know what? This is before we were married. I just said, you know what? I have a fear that if I love you, you'll die. And he laughed, you know, and I was very upset because he laughed. He's like, why would you think a horrible thing like that? And so I shared that with him, and he was like, that fear is holding you back from the love of your life. You know, so how about you just embrace me and love me more, and let's see where it takes us. And here we are 12 years later, you know, happily married, all these beautiful children, five kids. Two are not his, but, you know, I just said, wow, I never thought, you know, that embracing what I feared most would come out, you know, to be a beautiful thing. So I just wanted to encourage all those who have certain fears, you know, maybe embracing them and accepting them for what they are would help you overcome them. And I do thank you all for this call. Blessings.
Thank you, Leslie. That's congratulations on overcoming that fear. Who's next? I'm sorry.
Hey, this is LaToya from Sweet Home, Alabama.
Hey, LaToya.
Hey, thank you so much for doing the call today. You're doing a great job. I just wanted to come out because it's so funny because as you read, I'm like, oh, my God, I got so many of these fears. And when I was growing up, my father, he was a pastor, and I come from a really religious background. So, you know, I mean, the teachings of the fire and the brimstone and all of that, you know, that has been ingrained in me for a long time. So it has taken me a minute to, you know, sort through fears. And I know a lot of people who have grown up in the church can probably identify with, you know, just having so much fear because, you know, that some of the scare tactics that they, you know, use in church and everything to, you know, kind of sway you to do something or whatever. So, you know, that's kind of been one of my struggles in life. You know, I've feared a lot of things, you know, and I've also, you know, feared, you know, not fitting in and, you know, just feeling like I was different and everything. But you do have to get control over your mind and realize that, you know, those things are not true, you know, that people, there are good people out here and that do love you and they do accept you. And, you know, you just keep trying, you can overcome anything. So I just want to encourage, you know, people on the call to continue to, you know, fight past those fears because I know you can do it and I know we can. And I'm so thankful for this family because y'all make me feel so at home and I love y'all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, LaToya. Yeah, those fears can really hold us back. Star 6 is next.
Gwen Smith.
I'm sorry, who?
No, this is Travis.
Gwen Smith.
Gwen Smith.
Hi, good morning.
Travis.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. I wanted to share a little bit as well about fear. And I had a lot of fears about things like fear of height, fear of closures, enclosures. And real quickly, a story that I experienced something in 2013 where I went to a wilderness activity. And to make a long story short, we were supposed to climb up on this pole, which is like 50 feet off the ground, and go across this rope, which is about 2 inches thick, and make it over. There were three vertical ropes suspended above me, and I had to reach each one of them further apart. And eventually, I made it across that rope. And in that moment, just with the cheers of everybody below on the ground, I had a partner who was partly paralyzed because she had a stroke. And I had prayed for me not to get her, because not because of the stroke, but because I was too afraid for myself, and partners were supposed to support one another. And I knew she couldn't support me up there. So anyway, I not only did I do my half, but I did her half, went over, pulled her up on the rope, which was quite an accomplishment. And in that moment, I discovered like three things about fear. And the first thing is that it is an imposter. It is occurring as though it is saving me from danger, when in fact what's actually happening is that I'm being impeded. My growth is being impeded. So I'm not growing when I court fear. Then the second thing that I discovered about fear is that I am really stronger than fear. And just as much as I drag my past experiences into that moment to create the fear, and I could create something that is empowering for me just as much as I created that thought that generated that fear. So that thought alone allowed me to do something else, which was even more daring later on after this experience. And the third thing I discovered about fear was that all you've got to do is take one step at a time. You don't have to figure out the whole journey. See, when I was on that ground looking up and seeing everybody fall off that rope, that was blowing my mind. I couldn't handle it. But when it came my turn, I had to focus on going up one rung of ladder on at a time. And then the funny thing is, once I was up on that rope, it wasn't that fear anymore. It was just sustaining myself one step at a time. So those three things really were big revelations for me in that moment. Fear is not real. It's an imposter. I can create something that is empowering for me instead of allowing that fear to override me, create something that's empowering. And then I can just take one single step at a time. All I need to see is the next step. So I hope this encourages someone as much as it did encourage me when I made that discovery. And thank you all for sharing. Have the most amazing day.
Thank you, Wen. That is so true. Sometimes all we have is the next step, and that's the step we should take. So, Travis, are you there still?
Yes, I am. Bill, I just wanted to take a moment and thank you so much for your generosity and leadership today. What an excellent job you did. And I want to thank you as a brother of yours that is close to you. I'm thankful for your leadership, your courage to go the extra mile. You do everything in excellence, and I'm proud to know you. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth.
Hey, Elizabeth. Come on out, sister.
This is your SOB talking. How are you this morning? You have done an awesome job, and I just wanted to share with the audience. Of course, that means that Sassy Old Broad, Bill gave me that name some time ago. And this Sassy Old Broad is into her birthday week, and on Saturday I'm going to reach another milestone. I'll be 76. And I say that with pride and honor and glad to be alive. So many of us waste the goodness that our age, that comes with our age, just to be glad to get to that other milestone. Some people ask you, how old are you? And many of us say, oh, I don't tell my age. I don't want anybody to know my age. And it's a blessing to be another age. So I'm looking forward to more and more years. And the reason why I'm looking forward to it is I'm not fearing death. I've already died and come back. I flatlined and come back. And I think I told you that 3 years ago when I joined this call. So I fear no death. I've been there and back and had great experiences on the other side. But the thing is, if you sit around worrying about old age and illness and all that, instead of grasping something to serve others and to do something like the young lady said about grabbing those ropes and looking something that she could do to better herself and her friend, that's what life is all about, taking the next step. If you're not doing something for someone else or doing something to help humanity, you do want to die. Go on and die. Because what are you doing? You're doing nothing. And I say there's so much in every one of us. And regardless of your age, you can always contribute. But you got to love your life. I love all of you. Back to you, Bill.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth. And let me be the first to wish you a happy birthday. And 76 is a great year. I have a good friend whose mama passed away. And when his dad was 76, he got married again, and he started up a business. He'd been retired for many years, so he got a second lease on life. So 76 is not too old to make a difference. So thank you.
Jay Rizzle of Chicago.
Who is that? I'm sorry?
Woo-hoo! Jay Rizzle of Chicago.
Hey, Jay, come on out, brother.
What's going on, family? I heard you, Paul, so that means that I got my Paul fixed because I heard your voice. So I'm glad that you're still listening in. Gwen Smith, man, that was awesome what you just said. I understand you 100%. I've been in that very same situation, so I understand. I want to say this to the fam, okay? To understand fear, we got to understand something about courage, too. And what I want to say about that is what you have to know is that courage is not the absence of fear. Let me say that again. Courage is not the absence of fear. Sorry, I'm on my way to someplace, so excuse the background. What I mean by that is, if you think that you have to get over your fear in order to do the thing that you are afraid of, you are incorrect. The fear is going to be there no matter what. If it's unknown, if you've never done it, if it's something you have never seen anyone do, if it is outside of your comfort zone, the fear is there. It will be there. And all I'm telling you is that don't allow that to be an excuse for you not to do something. It is courage. Courage is about doing it in spite of your fear. That's important to know. Another thing that has helped me in my fear-based challenges is that having people around me who are not afraid. That is huge. If you have people around you who are some trailblazing folks, they're willing to take it all and do what's necessary, and they go ahead. Fearless people, being around fearless people. Being around fearless people is contagious, and it will make you a fearless person, and over time you'll see that out of yourself. Just because I'm afraid of something or I did something and I was afraid, I had a huge fear of, like, wilderness. And camping, because I'm a city person, you know what I'm saying? I'm from Chicago. I'm urban all day long. So, you know, I had a problem with the woods and everything, but I love nature. So I went camping a whole bunch of times. And let me tell you something. I'm still scared of camping, but I still want to go. It's not going to stop me. Another thing that she mentioned about the heights is, this is all I can say about that, and I'm going to close my little comments here, is though you might be afraid of heights, and I was afraid of heights. Let me tell you, I have never seen a view in my life like I have from the top of a mountain. Don't miss that view, family. Don't miss that view because you're afraid. Go out there, challenge it, do what you need to do. And I love you guys. Have a great day.
Thank you, Jerry. Well said. Who is it? I'm sorry.
Hi, it's Kathy.
Hi, Kathy. Come on up.
Good morning, friends and family. I just have a couple things to say. It's kind of funny because one of my fears is that I might ramble on and have to get cut off, and I hate that. So don't let me ramble. But I have figured out that one of my other fears is sometimes of judgment, but it's really more of, oh, I don't know if I can even really go into it, but fear of promoting myself. For some reason, it's easier to promote a lot of other things and a lot of other people than to promote myself. I'm like, why do I do that? So one of the things that I have been doing recently is becoming certified as a belief breakthrough coach. And I was actually able to go through a process and help a woman to overcome her fear of water, fear of drowning. As a child, she swam a lot. And then somehow she came along to a point in her life where she was afraid of going in the water. And I said, well, how has that affected you in your life? What has it cost you? And she said, well, the family all went snorkeling and I stayed in the boat. And what she had missed out on, just several stories of things that she had missed out on because of her fear. And so we went through this process and I was able to help her to overcome this fear. And it was just such a great feeling. I said, so what's your next inspired step? What are you going to do? She said, I'm going to the beach and I'm going in the water. And it was just so liberating. But one of the things that we talked about is recognizing fear, understanding where it comes from, going back to that moment where you first felt that fear, and being able to make a new decision that you're not going to let that rule your life, that you're not that you can step into faith instead of fear. And I've realized too, and with Halloween coming on, I share this a little bit, because my biggest fear is of Satan himself. And I realize that he wants us to be afraid of him. And so I'm like, how can I give him that power? In fact, I don't know if I won't mention name because he does have a system, but there's a guy that he talks about Satan, and he chooses to call them dot people, because calling them anything, demons or anything, that may give them power. So that these voices that we hear that are not our own may be demons around us. And we do have the power. In the Bible, it says we can crush their head. And by raising your arm to the square, casting them out, how did Jesus do it? I mean, if we're following Christ, he said, Satan, get thee behind me. And just recognizing that and being able to cast that out, there's there's just a lot that we can do to overcome our fears. But the first thing we need to do really is to recognize where they come from and that they cannot exist with faith. So if we're having fears of any kind, then we're lacking faith in some way. And so if we can build our faith and do just as some of the people have said on this call, just embrace it, overcome it, think of others instead of yourself, because it may be a selfish thing. I mean, if we've got fears that are keeping us from achieving what we need to do and helping people the way we can, those fears are not helping us there. And it's just exactly what the adversary would have us do, fall into our fears. And we really need to overcome our fears with our faith. So thanks. That was
awesome.
Mr.
Bill, thank you. We're at time, everyone. So, I wanted to thank everyone who came out on the call, Mahara, Anthony, Paul, Jesse, Leslie, Latoya, Gwen, Travis, Elizabeth, Jay, and Kathy. Wonderful call. And as is our custom, we like to kind of shout out the universe, what we took away from the call. So let me open the lines for everyone.
Absolutely.